Welcome into our Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brentz, joined tonight by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good. We got baseball, man. This week, Thursday, we have games that actually count.
Yes. Yes. Very excited. Been waiting a long time for this. You know, I've been basically waiting since the Mets season started last year for good baseball. We may have to continue waiting, but who knows. We're also joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm doing well. You were just waiting for that good Braves baseball, that plus 500 baseball we're going to be playing this year. You heard it here first. This is where we do the hot takes, right?
And everyone say goodbye to Evan Peterson. He's now off the show.
Well, no. I mean, now with the season starting, everyone's going to see how right or wrong we really are. So, I mean, it could be a good thing or a bad thing.
This is the fun part. We did all of the looking at the stats and forecasting, as I like to kind of call it, because nobody really knows. We just kind of look at everything and we make our best guess. And now is the time where, you know, the rubber hits the road, as they say. Isn't that what they say?
I think so. Somebody says it somewhere at some time.
Ben, have you ever said that?
Never said that, no.
Well, Ben, we know Ben. I mean, he's never seen The Godfather. We know there's a lot of other things with
Ben. I have seen The Godfather.
Well, you've seen it now.
This is a new development.
But we know that we need to work with Ben in his culture.
It's ongoing. He says he can only handle one thing at a time. So let's knock out this podcast, and then we'll move on to, you know, exposing Ben to greater pop culture.
All right, let's do it.
I'm surprised you guys aren't happy that I'm back after a week hiatus with the flu.
We were all gone.
That was why last week's show was so much better.
We didn't do a show last week.
We actually had the Push Accept podcast take our place for their inaugural show. But I basically have been out of podcasting for the last couple of weeks because of the flu. So
I have my onion ready with the tears. I did miss you.
Oh, thanks. You know what? Why don't you go get a new car, all right, Ray?
I just might.
Okay. Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter before we get started?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28.
And what about you, Evan?
At EvFWFB on Twitter.
I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. Guys, tonight we're going to be doing our bold predictions as well as our awards show. So it may not be as long as our normal tiers podcast, but I think there's going to be a lot of different things that people necessarily weren't expecting to come from us in terms of our opinions with certain players. But why don't we just jump right in, and let's start with our NL MVP for this upcoming year. Evan, who's your NL MVP for this upcoming year?
I went ahead and I took Nolan Arenado. I think the Rockies are going to be a very good team, and you'll kind of see this as a theme throughout a couple of my predictions here. And I just think, you know, like Blackman is probably going to have a pretty good season as well, but I think the crux of what the Rockies are going to do is going to come off Arenado bashing, you know, over 40 home runs and hitting, you know, over, you know, 300. I just think he's a really solid pick. I don't mind the guys that you put down. I think this is the year for Arenado. I think this is the year where everybody realizes how good he really is.
And what about you, Ray? Who did you think was going to be the NL MVP this year?
I went with Bryce Harper. I mean, obviously, I can't argue at all with Arenado. I completely agree with Evan. I'm not sure how much agreeing we're going to be doing on this show. But with Arenado, I agree. I think Arenado is going to finish up there, definitely in the top five. But my thing is, I'm not sure Arenado is going to have a better season than he did last year. And obviously, we know he didn't win it last year. Him and Blackman kind of cancel each other out. So I went with Harper on the thinking that we know Harper is a ridiculous talent. He's still young. He's going into his free agent season. It obviously comes with the caveat that he does stay healthy. But if he does, he's probably the third best player in fantasy baseball behind Trout and Altuve, and you could make a case. And, I mean, the reason why he's down there at third is because he doesn't run. He stole 21 bases in 2016. He'll be lucky to get double digits this year. So, for me, it's Harper. I'm kind of going with maybe a little more boom, a little more boldness. But I think especially with Murphy missing the beginning of the season, Harper's going to have to carry that team too.
Yeah, I mean, I like both of your guys' picks. I think that Arenado is going to be a great player. I still think that he is easily a top five pick in every single draft, every single type of format, and he's just a solid all-around player. And Harper, I love Harper, and I don't think that Harper has an ability to run. I think he just chooses not to run at times, especially with how good that lineup is around him. Now that they've added Eaton to come back, and they have a full year of Trey Turner and Eaton, hopefully, and Rendon and all the other hitters, and they don't have bums like Jason Worth. I think that they're not really going to have to expect him to run a ton, and I think double digits is roughly the peak of the season, like Ray was saying. I personally think that we're looking at Charlie Blackmon to win the MVP this year. I mean, I think that he's got the capability of getting 20 steals, hitting 35 home runs, still having 120 runs score with 100 RBIs and a 310 average. So I think that it would be close between him and Arenado. Arenado was my runner-up. And I think that the Rockies, those two players, specifically for Rockies, are just going to help propel them into being in the wild card race.
Yeah, one of the first things that I ever wrote when I got into the fantasy baseball industry like 3 years ago was an article about why I wouldn't be getting high on Bryce Harper, because I mean, you know, you hear all this stuff like he's only hit over 30 home runs once, or, you know, this, that, or the other. He's always hurt. But I mean, I get the Harper hype as far as the contract year and everything like that. But it just always seems like it's one thing or the other with him. So, I mean, and maybe it's, you know, because he's a National and I, you know, hate them because they constantly kick the shit out of the Braves. But, yeah, I don't know. I like the Blackmon pick more than I like the Harper pick.
I mean, 1 year Harper's going to do it. That's kind of what I'm going on. Why
1 year
he's
going to win the MVP because he's already done that.
No, I mean, the last, I guess he's gonna, I feel like we're always left wanting more with him. I mean, it's really because he doesn't stay healthy. It's the main thing. I mean, so he had 243 in 2016, last year only played 111 games. So, I mean, yeah, he had that 2015 season, which was out of control, but I feel like after that, we were just left wanting more with him. I'm thinking that maybe he will do it. I'm not sure I'm willing to bank on him with the first five picks in a draft, but after that, I'm potentially willing to roll the dice in the first round on him because he has that potential. And for me, it's an issue of health.
Anything else to add, Evan?
No, we can move forward.
All right.
Onward!
Why don't we give our dark horse candidates for MVP?
Freddie Freeman.
Okay, I wasn't planning on starting with you, but sure, why don't we start with you, Evan?
Hashtag MVFree. It's been something that I've been backing. You call me the Braves homer or whatever. I just think Freddie Freeman is as solid of a player. His swing, it was real touching that I was sitting on the couch watching spring training with my son, and I pointed up to the TV because he was playing his 3DS, and I said, "Hey, Freddie Freeman's batting. You need to watch this. This is how you need to hit." And I do think that if his wrists just stay intact, and you know the LASIK surgery, which obviously he's going to hit, you know, 600. I just think this could be the year that he puts it all together.
I can't hate on Freeman at all. I like Freeman a lot. My problem is, and I know it's not necessarily going to be a popular opinion here, is that I'm not sure the Braves are going to win enough for Freeman to be the MVP.
Lies and hearsay.
So I mean, to me, again, I'm sticking with health question marks here. I figure if we're gonna go big or go home, I'm gonna bet on Yoenis Cespedes taking to yoga and Cespedes managing to stay healthy and being the dark horse.
And you want to talk about kind of injury-prone guys, because Cespedes has had that tag ever since he was an Athletic, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I figured why be boring here? You know what? Why be boring? Let's go out on a little bit of a limb. So, I mean, he has 6 homers in the spring. I know spring training numbers really don't mean much, but, I mean, everything I've seen of Cespedes is he looks great. He looks healthy. I think if he can stay in the lineup, he should be able to hit 40 driving 100 runs. And I mean, if the Mets contend for a wild card spot, why not?
Do you now, Ben? We were talking about how I don't play in many points leagues. Do you get extra points for cigarettes smoked in the dugout between innings?
No.
Well, I'm sorry. Was that not as funny as I thought it was?
I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, he also gave up golf, so maybe.
Hey, the one thing I haven't heard is, did he show up with any flashy rides at spring training? Any new whips?
Not that I know of.
That was the big thing last year.
I feel like I need to interject something here, and take us a little off topic. We're talking about bold predictions, and Ben decides to ask whether he should take John Lackey or Jordan Zimmermann.
That's a bold prediction.
It's a bold prediction that one of them's going to have an ERA under 5.
I didn't say that it wasn't going to be.
Just felt we should bring that up.
Well,
anyway, back.
I'm trying to decide if my 8th round draft pick is worth John Lackey, or if I should just keep Jordan Zimmermann as my 40th man on my roster. It's 40 man teams and 20 team owners or 20 owners. There's 800 players owned. There's not a lot of free players here.
Give me a middle reliever. Anybody?
I already have 11.
All right, let's get back on track. Ben,
let's get back on the route. Yeah.
Who's your NL black horse? Dark horse.
Black horse. Wow, racist, Evan.
No, I was looking at black men and horse, and sorry.
It doesn't help your case.
No.
No.
My dark horse for this year is Marcell Ozuna. I think that Ozuna is a player that was great last year. I think that he's going to be on an even better team this year. I think that because the Marlins weren't a great team last year, the fact that Stanton was able to win showed how great Stanton was, and you know, kind of showed how many other hitters in the National League maybe weren't as great as everyone thought. If you're trying to go up and down the MVP list, there's not a ton of great hitters that you could really assign the MVP award to. I think that Ozuna is someone who could easily have 100 runs, 100 RBIs, another 30 home run season while hitting over 300. Chip in a couple of steals, and I think that if the Cardinals are able to compete and win the division like I actually predict them to do, as we'll discuss later, I think that could help propel him into an MVP race.
I couldn't agree more. I have him in my top 5 for MVP for this year.
Yeah, it's interesting to see if he's going to be able to maintain the gains that he definitely showed last year. Do you think he's a solid bet to hit more? Like, if you just looked at home runs at the end of the season between the guys that we just named, Freeman, Cespedes, and Ozuna, how much of emphasis would you put on Ozuna hitting the most?
I say about
put a percentage on it.
10 to 15%, Ben.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
I know that I absolutely butchered that question. Okay, yeah. So the three names that we just mentioned, mm-hmm. Freeman, Ozuna, Cespedes, if you had to rank them as far as power, top to bottom, who would they be?
I think that Ozuna's ahead of Cespedes for power. I would say...
because they're all right in that third.
Yeah, I think that Ozuna's probably ahead of Freeman in power, too, because I think that Freeman just may hit, like, two less home runs. But I think that the power is best for Ozuna, especially playing – he continues to play in great offenses. And up until the last couple of years, he always showed good power numbers and then got hurt. And I think he had a wrist injury 2 years ago, which obviously would take some power away. Freeman had a wrist injury last year, but it was his really, really big power season. I want to be able to see another season like that from Freeman, but I think that Ozuna could maybe hit like one or two more home runs.
Yeah, but don't you think Cespedes is the bigger batting average liability out of all this?
I do, and that's why I would put him third. And that's me as a Mets fan. I just, you know, at his age and the injuries piling up, I think that he's the biggest injury risk. I think he's the biggest batting average risk. He's going to get you the least amount of steals between the three. The Mets offense could still be bad if other players like Conforto get hurt or other players don't perform around him, so he could have the least amount of counting stats. Of the three offenses, that's clearly the worst offense, in my personal opinion. Even though I think that they'll contend for a wild card this year, I just think that's more of a predicament of the rest of the NL more so than the Mets lineup. Why don't we move over into the AL MVP? And Ray, who's your AL MVP?
My AL MVP, excuse me for being a little bit of a homer here, is none other than Carlos Correa. I think, obviously, no one's going to argue that Altuve is the better player. Altuve is going to be drafted higher in fantasy because, obviously, those stolen bases in the batting average. But I think Correa is still just 23 years old. He had a very nice year last year, and I mean, it was interrupted. He was out for what, like 6 weeks or so with a thumb injury. Then he came back, probably came back a little too early in the regular season as they tried to get him ready for the playoffs. I think Correa just batting cleanup. If he bats behind Altuve, you have Springer and Bregman ahead of them. I think the power that he has, I think Correa is just only going to continue getting better. And if you're going to pick one guy to maybe stand out, from a run-producing perspective on that team, it's going to be Correa.
Are you worried about the drop-off in steals? That's the one thing, as I've been looking at Correa in drafts this year, that has kind of held me back from drafting him. And you're definitely more tapped into the Astros. I just think that when you look at any given category across the board, that Altuve is probably going to outproduce Correa in that category.
I think the home runs in the RBI... And that's kind of what I'm basing it on as far as MVP. But fantasy-wise, with obviously stolen base, Altuve definitely has it. And I don't think Correa is really going to run that much.
Ben?
I like Correa. I really do. I just, if he doesn't run, it's tough for me to be able to peg him as the MVP. And I think that he's going to be able to put up good power numbers and great counting stats. But I think that if I was to pick someone on his team, let alone, I'm more likely to go with Springer or Altuve. Altuve would be my pick of the three, but I still think that if I had to pick someone of the Astros to win, I think Correa is probably my third-ranked MVP player on that team.
Interesting. I mean, because Springer doesn't run either.
He doesn't. And I understand that, but at the same point in time, he could put up similar power numbers. He, if not better, he could have basically the same amount of RBIs and runs and potentially the same batting average. But at the same point in time, I think that if they're going to basically be very similar, then it's likely to go to someone like Springer, who is leading off for the team and has more at-bats than someone like Correa. I just think that the extra at-bats with the potential of maybe a slightly better counting stats total could push that. And like I said, I still think that would be Altuve over him, over both, because of everything that Altuve is able to do. But I think it's pretty close between Springer and Correa. I just would lean Springer.
These guys are going to cannibalize each other is what's going to end up happening.
They are. It's going to be like Arenado and Blackman. I mean, again, but I feel like Altuve is kind of easy. Like, oh, it's going to be Altuve, or oh, it's going to be Trout. I feel like that's kind of the easy way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know those guys are studs.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really arguing over anything really earth-shattering here. I think the Dark Horse picks are a lot more fun. Did I say that correctly this time? Dark Horse?
Yes.
Fantastic. Ray, you said Byron Buxton. Sorry to spoil it for everybody.
I did. I mean, I think obvious. I'm banking on the potential and banking on what we saw in September out of Buxton and kind of the second half in general, that Minnesota's a team. I know we've mentioned this across a few podcasts this offseason. They're kind of on the up and up a little bit. And I think Buxton's going to kind of put it together. And if the Twins are in contention for a wild card spot, that'll help his profile. And then what about Justin Upton for you, Evan?
I would like to be able to touch on the fact that Evan has Jose Altuve as his MVP because we haven't actually addressed it yet.
Okay. I thought we just said that everything that Carlos Correa can do, Jose Altuve can do better.
I agree.
He can do anything better than you.
I just wanted to point out for the listeners that your MVP choice happens to be Altuve because you haven't technically announced that that was your choice.
I thought that was made clear. Sorry.
I'm just pointing it out, but go ahead and talk about your dark horse.
Justin Upton, and I know a lot of people like to get on him for being streaky. He's gotten off to a fantastic start in spring. Not that it matters. Probably what matters more is that he's going to hit behind Mike Trout, who's Mike frickin' Trout. And he's going to hit right in front of Albert Pujols, who's still driving in, 100 home runs. I just think he's in a really solid spot in a really good lineup for a guy that, at the end of the year has put up the numbers. I think he's maybe going to get some opportunity to run in the Angels system. I know me and Werner have been talking for a couple of years that we kind of hoped that the Steels would be better than they actually have been. I just think it could be a very interesting season for Justin Upton.
I'm on board the Upton train. I think Upton, because he's a little bit older, I think he's one of those guys that kind of falls under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I like Upton. I think that he's, if nothing else, he's a consistent player. You'll have spurts in which he sucks during the season, spurts where he's great. But at the end of the year, he's pretty consistent. He typically is always right around the same amount of steals and home runs. County stats are pretty similar, and the batting average is pretty similar. So he's a consistent player, so that makes him slightly boring and slightly unappreciated, which means that for him to be able to get MVP consideration wouldn't be completely out of the realm of possibility, because if the Angels are as good as people think that they could be, then if it wasn't someone like Mike Trout who would win, then it would be someone like Justin Upton.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously hard to pick an MVP candidate that's on the same team as Mike Trout, but if you're looking at kind of overall statistics, or if you want to look at it as like a fantasy MVP or whatever, I definitely think his name belongs in that conversation.
My MVP and my dark horse are Mike Trout and Josh Donaldson. Obviously, Mike Trout, if he's healthy, he's always going to be in consideration. So it's kind of a cop-out answer, but he's always going to be in consideration as long as he's healthy. It just depends on if someone like a Jose Altuve leads his team to the best record in the American League, or someone like Aaron Judge has a year like last year and brings the Yankees to the best record. Mike Trout, it works against him to the fact that his team is not as good as some of the other great players in the American League, and they can have the same stats and they can make the playoffs and he hasn't, but he's obviously shown that he's capable of doing it with two MVP awards and always being basically runner-ups every other year. I think the Donaldson thing is something that obviously can gain a lot of traction because he's been able to win an MVP award. He's someone who is consistent with his power over the last few years. If he's able to stay healthy and make the Blue Jays semi-relevant, then he's someone who could win. But there's also a chance he could get traded during the year if they fall out of the race, because he is likely to leave after this year because of his last arbitration season, if I recall correctly. So there's a chance that he's not even on the team, and as a result, it would take him out of the MVP race.
Next year, we could be drafting Donaldson like we're drafting Stanton this year. And I know you're not on board with the Stanton stuff, but they are obviously on what could be similar arcs.
No, I like Donaldson. I think Donaldson should be healthy. And I think he's kind of one of those guys in that second, I know we've talked about it at some point, that like second, third round range, that he kind of flies under the radar a little bit.
And that's the thing, like, he flies under radar for fantasy because people are like, oh, well, he didn't have a great year last year. Well, I mean, he was hurt, and at you know, you don't knock certain other players for being hurt all the time, and it was his first year being hurt in the last, like, 4 years or something that he missed significant time, and he still had a pretty decent year other than the average. You know, he's not going to get stolen bases. Edwin Encarnacion's not there. Batista's not there. But, you know, Justin Smoke has another decent year. Obviously, Tulowitzki's a shell of himself, but they have some other pieces on the team that could be decent, and he's still considered an MVP candidate, whatever team he's on. So I don't see why he has to be underappreciated by fantasy owners, which I've come to find that there's a lot of players who do kind of underappreciate where he is. I could see him being a top 20 player to finish the year, and some people won't take him until like the late 20s, early 30s with certain picks, and I think that he's closer to a top 20 player than closer to a top 30. So, why don't we move over into the Cy Young position, and let's go with Ray, who has Carlos Carrasco as his Cy Young and Gerrit Cole as his dark horse. So why don't you give me a little bit of insight of both of them and why you picked those players, Ray?
I think Carrasco, I mean, he's younger than Kluber. I was thinking Kluber. I mean, Sale would be the first choice, or people would think Sale would be the first choice. I'm not necessarily concerned that he got hit with the line drive the other day. I just think that maybe he does have – pitching the AL East is tough. I mean, obviously, last year it's hard to find any fault with what Sale does, but maybe he gets injured. I was kind of just taking the angle of that Carrasco still has a little bit of growing to do. He benefits from a strong lineup in Cleveland, benefits from a strong bullpen. He gets to face the Tigers. He gets to face the White Sox. He gets to face the Royals. So you have three teams there where in the division where you're not scared of the lineup. And he's still on the younger side, and he has a little bit of developing to do. And as far as Cole, I think if we want to talk crazy predictions or bold predictions or whatever it is, one of mine is that Cole will be the best end the season as the best Astros pitcher, meaning better than Keuchel, better than Verlander. With Keuchel, it really comes down to the strikeouts. That Cole's going to strike out more than a batter in an inning, and Keuchel just doesn't generate those strikeouts. So from a fantasy perspective, Cole's worth more. And Verlander, it's more just with the age that maybe he's going to struggle at times. Maybe they won't have him pitch as deep into games in June, July. And I think Cole's a younger guy. He's going to be reinvigorated, excited by coming to Houston. He gets to pitch with the new philosophy. He's going to emphasize the breaking pitches more, pitch more to his strength. So I think the move out of Pittsburgh into Houston is going to kind of work wonders as far as re-energizing Cole.
And Evan, you have Verlander and Paxton as your Cy Young winner and dark horse. You want to give me a little insight on those?
Yeah, so and just kind of real quick to touch on kind of the Gerrit Cole stuff. I mean, obviously, since I picked Verlander and same team, there's a reason why I went with one or not the other. I don't know about the home run issues I saw with Gerrit Cole last year, and obviously those things can be, you know, slightly variable, but I mean, Pittsburgh is a place that's regarded as you know where pitchers go when they find themselves or whatever. And I understand that the pitch mix guys, like Ray was talking about, he's going to be throwing, you know, a different percentage in his repertoire. We'll see how that all kind of shakes out in the end. I just think as far as durability, as far as getting over the core surgery for Verlander was a big thing. He's, you know, just as good of a lock to throw 200 plus innings as I think, you know, really anybody at this point in time. Even though he does have a little bit of mileage on the arm, I just think the results are definitely there. Paxton as a dart throw, because it's kind of an injury thing, but when he's on the mound, he can be one of the best pure, you know, strikeout arms. You know, we're just talking about AL as far as the Cy Young, but you know, if you want to look in the overall landscape of the game, he'd be up there as well. It's just, you know, is he going to throw 145 innings or is he going to throw 185 innings, which would be very nice. And I think we would all say that he would definitely be a top 10 pitcher if you could guarantee 185 innings of what Paxton's done the past couple of years.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of Paxton. If obviously, if he stays healthy, like you said.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the biggest thing for me, is that I think that if he's able to stay healthy, which is, you know, a pretty big task for him, he's always going to be capable of being able to be a Cy Young pitcher because of the strikeouts and the great numbers that he's able to produce, and the fact that the Mariners could easily be a wild card team or even compete for the West title this year, you know, if he is able to stay healthy and put together great numbers, then that always helps propel people in individual races, and that could be a reason that he could win a Cy Young. So, for my Cy Young and Dark Horse, I have Verlander and Severino. I think that Verlander is still invigorated himself from coming from Detroit to a team that just won the World Series. I think that he is always someone who's going to be in consideration. It was tough between him and Kluber. But I think that Verlander is going to be able to keep duplicating great numbers and has a great chance of being able to do it playing for what I think is the best team in baseball, or one of the best teams in baseball. And for Severino, I think that if the Yankees can turn into a 95 to 98 win team, which I think they're fully capable of doing, I think that Severino, if he has a year like last year, is able to go and win the Cy Young, because he would be the person who helps lead the team to that great of a record. And as I've been saying all podcasts, the team record does help influence the writers for where their picks will be, because they think that a great player on a great team deserves more than a great player on a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, a team can finish in last place with or without anybody.
Exactly. Guys, we're going to take a quick break and have a word from our sponsor. If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There's no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit, and you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. All right, why don't we move over to the NL Cy Young, and I'll start it off. I personally have Clayton Kershaw going to be the Cy Young and Robbie Ray as my dark horse. I think that Kershaw's going to be able to put together a healthy season, and any time that he's healthy, he's always going to be in consideration for the Cy Young. It's likely between him and Scherzer if he is healthy. If not, which he has shown the last 2 years that he's had back injuries, and we'll see if he's able to not have any injuries this year, but, you know, he's shown that he's great every single time that he's on the mound. So he's always going to be in consideration, and I think that Robbie Ray, who was a great pitcher last year, can continue to build on that. I think that the humidor could actually help him a little bit. I know Evan hates talking about the humidor, but I still think that sure he's going
science.
Science is correct. But I do think that the strikeouts will still be there. I think he's going to generate a ton. I think that another year under his belt, he could maybe improve on cutting down on walks, maybe cutting down on some home runs and everything. I think that he has a chance to be an MVP candidate if he's able to help lead the Diamondbacks to a good record this year.
I think he has a chance to just flat out fall on his face, to be 100% honest with you. I didn't put it as
a fall on your face.
It's not that I don't like Ray and I don't have him in spots where, you know, I really kind of need him to be good.
Which Ray are we talking about? Ray Kuhn or Robbie Ray?
Ray Kuhn has never fallen flat on his face, sir. Yeah, Robbie Ray, you talked about the walk stuff and, okay, the humidor, everybody can, you know, calm down a little bit. But, okay, let's, like a top 75 pick, I just think it's way too aggressive on Robbie Ray. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I mean, I did put Rich Hill as my dark horse, so I'm obviously not the sanest person in the world.
I love Rich Hill.
I know you do, and you talk about like pure K guys. Yeah, Rich Hill could do that if he could throw the innings. It's just how many are you going to say? Is, you know, the home run issue going to be the same? But you can say that about everybody. And obviously, not to gloss over the fact that I put Thor as my main one. I know I'm kind of all over the map here. But yeah, I don't. It's kind of like my Steven Strasburg argument from last year. Yeah, he's injury prone, but if he can just stay on the damn mound, he's going to be an absolute boss. And we may as well show New York a little bit of love here.
I can't hate on Thor. I mean, every indication is he looks healthy. So every indication is he looks healthy. So I think he's definitely a good pick.
Yeah.
While we move over to Ray, who has Clayton Kershaw as his winner and Syndergaard as his dark horse. So, Ray, we've obviously touched a little bit on Kershaw and on Syndergaard. Why do you think those players will win or potentially win this year?
I mean, again, we've talked about, obviously, spring stats. They matter to a point, but you don't want to read into them too much. But, I mean, if you look at Kershaw, spring heat and run in 21 innings. I mean, Kershaw just looked phenomenal. Maybe I'm thinking that he's going to be healthy with the back. I'm knowing a lot of my choices here. Health has kind of been a question. So, I mean, if Kershaw stays healthy with his bat, with his back, I think he's going to obviously continue the standard of excellence we've seen from him. And with Thor, came back, he was throwing 100 last game of the season. He's been throwing gas all spring so far. I'm happy with Mickey Callaway and kind of the new Mets approach. So I'm going to say that he stays healthy and that his injury was kind of a freak thing last year. So figure we'll just go with Thor. And again, he gets to face the NL East. So he's getting the Marlins. He's getting the Phillies. He's getting the Braves, who still have some holes in their lineup. So he's going to have some favorable matchups as well.
Anything to add on those two pitchers, Evan?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well there.
All right, why don't we move over to the AL Rookie of the Year. Evan has Willie Calhoun and Gleyber Torres is his winner and dark horse. Ray has Kyle Tucker and Miguel Andujar as his winner and dark horse. And I have Ohtani and Kopech. Sorry?
I was saying Homer on the Tucker pick.
And I have Ohtani and Kopech as my winner and dark horse. So why don't we move over to the Homer and Ray and ask him why he thinks that Tucker will win the MVP.
Because I think Tucker is going to come up maybe a little sooner than people think. And Tucker is, and I mean, this spring, Tucker certainly looked more than comfortable handling the bat, facing some major league pitching. Obviously, he faced some pitching that was less than major league quality as well. But whoever he faced, he took advantage of it. He's taken advantage of it through the minors. He was fifth pick overall in the draft. He has the pedigree. He has the swing. He has the production in the minor leagues. And the thing that I like about Tucker is that he's coming up. It's not like somebody like an Acuna where he's coming up and he's going to be the savior and all eyes are going to be on him. Tucker's going to come in and be maybe and still be one of the least recognizable guys in that clubhouse and in that lineup. And he's going to bat seventh or eighth. There's not going to be any pressure on him. And he's just going to get to go up there and hit. So that's what I like about it.
If you don't mind me asking, where exactly do you expect him to play and who's not playing as a result of him coming up?
That's my question.
I am going to go with a combination of, with probably Gattis.
So he's, he's playing catcher?
No, that Gattis would be move out of DH. And I mean, that they would kind of have a rotating cast at DH and Fisher would get steady at-bats in the outfield.
See, that makes it tough because that team is so loaded that it doesn't make sense for someone like Tucker to come up unless there's an injury. And even if he comes up, the likelihood is that they're going to play Fisher over someone like a Tucker.
But, I mean, they could ultimately play both if they could play one in left and one at DH.
Which I understand, but I think that Gattis could still have a decent year. You're not getting rid of Gurriel. Obviously, the rest of the infield is basically set. Marwin's likely going to play every single place again. I mean, I guess if you play Gattis as the catcher, but they obviously like McCann. They just have too many pieces for, I think, Tucker to be able to come up and have a Rookie of the Year type year this year. Maybe if they move on from a Josh Reddick and if they move on from one of their other hitters so that they could play Marwin somewhere, or that they have a DH spot open or something of that nature, I could understand it. It just, I don't think there's enough flexibility in their roster to be able to get him enough at-bats to get him Rookie of the Year numbers.
No, I mean, it's obviously a concern there. I mean, unfortunately, maybe an injury happens, but I think they're going to be very cautious with McCann and Gattis, that I'm not sure either one of them is going to catch more than three or four times a week, especially as we get into July, August, that I think they're going to be very careful with them, because McCann obviously started to wear down going into the playoffs, and when you get to the playoffs, you're going to have McCann catching every day anyway.
Do you want to add anything on this, Evan? Because I know that you had the same point of view as I, but I don't know if I basically said everything that you were looking to say.
No, you're good. As I said in the staff chat the other day, I support everything you say 100%.
Well, I appreciate that.
Wow, that's some statement.
And obviously, my guess would be is that you expect that Andujar is able to come up, play, and be consistent enough that he holds on to an everyday job for at least 5 months out of the year, and that the stats he's able to produce out of the 8 or 9 hole or even the 7 hole is decent enough to get potential Rookie of the Year numbers. Is that correct, Ray?
Yeah, I'm thinking that he's going to come up and be more impactful than Torres, because he had the better spring. I mean, he got a very small cup of coffee last year, but he got that cup of coffee. Torres was injured for most of the year last year. So I think that Andujar is going to end up coming up at third. I think the fact that they're starting with Wade, and then you have Drury as well, and Neil Walker, granted, you're going to have somebody, you know, Walker at first base. Will Bird is out, and who knows if Bird will ever stay healthy. But they're also working on Andujar at first base a little bit, so you could, if Tyler Austin doesn't do well, you could see him get some time there. So that's kind of what I'm basing that a little more on playing time than anything. Where Tucker, I'm just going with talent.
Fair and that it's a big mess, and that's why I kind of like Gleyber Torres to come out of there. Willie Calhoun, obviously, you know, maybe were a little shocked that he got sent down to the minors. I don't know if there were a ton of people thinking that he was going to break camp with the team, but if, like, Ryan Rua is your biggest, you know, hurdle to playing time, I think you're in a decent position, and I think he's kind of shown the profile in the minors to, you know, have a little bit of pop. Obviously, Shin-Soo Chu isn't a, you know, profile of steady health. So, I mean, there's different avenues to playing time for him. That's where I'd go with it.
Do you have anything to add on Calhoun, Ray? Because I don't.
I think Calhoun will obviously eventually be up, but I think the problem is it's going to take like a month and a half to 2 months. And I do like his hit tool when he's up, but it's the batting average that maybe I'm a little bit concerned about.
So you like his power? Because the hit tool kind of reflects on his average. So
no, I do like his power.
Okay.
I mean, again,
I'm his hit tool, but you don't like his average, and I felt that was kind of.
I meant to say more I like his power tool.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. For me, I think that Ohtani, because of the fact that he's able to put up duplicate stats in terms of hitting and pitching, and the likelihood is that he's up for the majority of the year, if not the entire year. I guess there's a chance he could start in the minors, but I think he's likely up for the entire year. If he has a pretty decent season, I think there's a good chance that he could win the MVP. Or win the Rookie of the Year. Only for the fact that everyone else who we've basically mentioned has to come up at some point and would have to perform for a team that likely will already have performers everywhere else through the lineup, so it will push them down to the bottom. So that's my reasoning. And I think that Kopech could theoretically come up in May, maybe even June, and he could put up fantastic numbers for a bad team and, you know, make them somewhat relevant in the second half of the year, that he's able to get some votes in terms of the Rookie of the Year numbers. So,
yeah, no, I think Kopech's going to come up and maybe take the league by storm a little bit, but it's that control that he really needs to watch.
Exactly. It's not Carson Fulmer bad, but he's got a
no. Run, so. I'm not sure if I would even say Giolito bad, tell you the truth.
Why don't we move over to the National League Rookie of the Year? Evan, of course, went Acuna because Homer.
Just because it's the right pick doesn't make it. Just because it's a chalk pick doesn't make it wrong, Ben.
I never said that. I just said it was a Homer pick.
It's the correct pick.
And Ray went Nick Senzel. Evan went Senzelis as Dark Horse, and Ray went Jesse Winker, because he's talked Jesse Winker all offseason, it feels like. And I went Scott Kingery and Walker Buehler as my winner and my and the Dark Horse. So, Ray, why don't we start with you? What makes Senzel and Winker two potential candidates for this award?
I think, well, to me, obviously, if it's not Senzel, it's probably going to be Okuna. Neither of them are starting the year with the team. I think Senzel... Okuna is a better player. So before Evan really gets too upset, Okuna is definitely the better player, will have the better career than Senzel. But if we're just talking 2018, Okuna getting into a slump or having trouble with the strikeouts or trouble adjusting seems more plausible to me than that happening with Senzel. I think Senzel just has a higher floor than Okuna has, at least initially in the first year. And Winker, I like his hit tool, and I think he's just one of those players that continues to get better. And if he's more with the launch angle and the power and driving the ball and the fly ball revolution, I think we'll just see his value increase.
And Evan, do you want to really say anything about Okuna other than the likelihood that he?
No, he's awesome.
Okay,
I love Okuna.
Did you have anything to write on Senzel?
No, I definitely agree with what Ray was saying as far as, you know, probably the better batting eye and whatnot. I just think as far as, you know, raw skill, Acuna could definitely, you know, hit, you know, skyrocket territory. And the Reds are just kind of this weird, like, you know, is Winker going to push for enough time? Is, you know, Senzel, like, something's got to happen to either Jose Peraza or Scooter Gennett. And these are guys that, like, maybe not necessarily Peraza, but I know a lot of guys are getting on him as far as, like, you know, post 200 in drafts, steals guys. I mean, I know everybody's drafts is over, but I just think it's going to be really interesting to see how the playing time shakes out for these guys, and that's why I couldn't necessarily pin one for playing time, as it were.
All right. Well, I think that Scott Kingery could win the award for the fact that he's starting the year up in the bigs. I think that he's got a good power-speed combo, could accumulate enough counting stats this year if he's able to get playing time, and you know, there's a good chance he could take over at second. There's a chance he could play third. There's openings for him to be able to get some playing time this year. And I think that because he's going to be up for the entire year, that could help him over someone like an Acuna or Senzel. Because for all we know, they may not be up until, let's say, May 15th. And they obviously lose a month and a half there. And there's a chance he's able to establish himself as an everyday player by that time and have already started producing some decent numbers. So,
and I think Kingery could accumulate more. Sorry.
Yeah.
And as for Walker Buehler, I think that he has a chance to come up for the Dodgers and, you know, put up some really good numbers. I think that because of how the team is and the fact that they play Russian roulette with the DL, and they're just like, oh, this player will be on the DL for the next 10 days, and they keep rotating. I think that Walker Buehler could be someone who could come up and be a consistent person in that rotation, even if they do not bring him up for the first month of the season. I think that once he's up, he's going to stay up, and he's going to be a consistent person, and that he's able to accumulate enough strikeouts and wins being on a good team that he could be someone who is considered an rookie of the year.
Yeah, I like Buehler a lot. I can't disagree with you there. I mean, the fact that he was up a little bit last year, I think, also helps.
I agree. Why don't we move over, and we're going to run through these real quick. All three of us have the Nationals as the NL East winners. Both Ray and Evan have the Cubs winning the Central. I have the Cardinals. All three of us have the Dodgers winning the West. The wild cards are expected to go for Evan, Rockies and Brewers, Ray to go Mets and Rockies, and myself to go Cubs and Mets. So why don't we discuss, is there any teams there that really kind of jump out at you as somewhat strange for any of us?
The Mets.
Why?
I don't know. I'm just not a huge... I mean, I understand that there's pieces there. I just think there's going to be better teams as far as the overall. Like, I mean, they could end up being better than the Brewers, who I picked. But, you know, like you picked the Cardinals, who I think could be a really interesting team to come out. I just don't really see the Mets as far as a real playoff contender for me this year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that the Cardinals are better than the Rockies and Brewers, so obviously for that reason I'd have them as my wild card team anyway. I think that they have a chance to be better than the Cubs just because I could easily see the Cubs, you know, have a year like last year, and the Cardinals could have a better year than last year, and they could be in a tight race down to, like, one of the last couple games, and it's, you know, like a two-game difference between them. Like, it's not hard to anticipate that type of year for them. As for the Mets, I think that the Mets, if they're able to stay healthy, they have a team that's got enough pitching and enough offensive power to be able to compete for a wild card team as, you know, like an 85, 86 win team. I don't think that there's a great chance that they're all able to stay healthy, but I think if they are, they're likely to compete for that wild card spot. Ray, was there any teams here that surprised you?
I mean, the thing, I like the Brewers, but their pitching just honestly worries me. And that's kind of, I mean, obviously their lineup is good, but I think the Mets lineup has the potential. If Cespedes stays healthy, Conforto looks like he's coming back healthy. I think they'll get enough from the infield, and Bruce was a nice addition. That, for me, it's really the starting pitching. If they stay healthy, if they do what they should do, then there's no reason why they wouldn't take it over the Brewers, whose rotation really scares me a little bit. But at the same time, I think all these wildcard teams, I don't think they're going to really be much over like 84, 85 wins.
I just think that if the Brewers kind of, you know, if they get a shot in the arm a la Jimmy Nelson and they go purchase somebody at the deadline, you know, if the Cards kind of scuffle out of the gate and they say, oh, you know, we, you know, might have a shot to actually make a run at this, I think they are in a position where they could make a move like that. So I understand the pitching as is kind of meh, but I think there's definite room for growth.
No, that's a good point with Nelson coming back.
There's definitely room for growth. It's just, and as the team sits now, there's just not enough pitching for them to be able to, I think, get into the wild card consideration. If teams like the Mets are able to stay healthy, the Cardinals can play to their potential, the Rockies, potentially even the Diamondbacks. So there's other teams that could do well that could prevent the Brewers from being able to compete this year if they don't go out and get some type of arm. And I understand Nelson is someone who they're talking about, but we don't know how he'll come back. But at the same point in time, even if Nelson comes back and is good, they probably still need to go and get someone at the deadline to be able to be a useful team down the stretch for them. So while we move into the American League, Ray has the Red Sox winning the East. Both Evan and I have the Yankees. All of us have the Astros and the Indians winning their respective divisions. I have the Red Sox and the Angels as the wildcard teams. Ray has the Twins and the Mariners, and Evan has the Mariners and the Red Sox. So, Ray, why don't we start with you? What makes you think that the Twins will once again be a wild card team?
I think they're going to feast on their division. I think Buxton's, Rosario's of the world are getting better. I think I like the addition of Odorizzi. I like the addition of Lynn. I like them getting Rodney and Reed for the back end of the bullpen. I think they're going to be able to build on what they did last year.
Well, I think that the boldest thing that you've said in all of that is that the Yankees aren't making the playoffs. And if you don't mind me asking, why do you think the Yankees won't make the playoffs?
That's nuts.
Well,
unless you just mistakenly forgot to put them in.
I did not mistakenly forget to put them in. I initially had them in and ultimately took them out. So to me, I'm thinking that I'm not sure that Aaron Judge is going to have the type of season that people are expecting Aaron Judge to have. And I think there's a lot of questions with the infield. We already saw Bird go down. I'm not sure how much money they have to really make an addition or what's going to be available at the trade deadline for them to make an addition to the team. I think they're putting an awful lot of emphasis on Tanaka. I like Severino. I like Sonny Gray. Montgomery is kind of just meh. I'm not sure that I think, you know, Tanaka, I mean, maybe this is going to be the year where Tanaka's UCL finally snaps. I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously that bullpen is out of control. They have the depth. Chapman's one of the best closers in the game, and they have multiple other leading options down there. So to me, I'm kind of just thinking that maybe the AL East will beat them up a little bit, and they're ultimately not going to have the starting pitching, and they're not going to be able to make it up because the offense isn't going to be as strong as they're expecting it to be.
Evan, do you have anything to add on any of these teams other than the fact that we think Braves will look crazy?
That's not new.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. I mean, you were talking about the Twins. You didn't even talk about Sano not getting suspended, which...
Oh, and and Sano, too. I do like Sano a lot. I think that's going to make a big difference for them.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being one of the... When we look back at, like, biggest steals of this draft season, I think Sano is probably going to be at the top of that list. But, no, everything else is pretty standard here.
All right. For the ALCS, Evan has the Yankees versus the Indians, Ray has the Astros versus the Red Sox, and I have Homer. The Yanks versus the Astros.
Homer.
How am I a homer? I'm a Mets fan.
I don't know, because you're a New York guy.
Continue. That doesn't make me like the Yankees anymore, but okay. For the NLCS, Evan has the Cubs versus the Nationals, Ray has the Nationals versus the Cubs, and I have the Nationals versus the Dodgers. Ray has the Astros versus the Nationals with the Astros winning the World Series. I have the Yanks versus the Dodgers with the Yanks winning the World Series. And Homer. Evan has the Nats versus the Indians with the Nats winning the World Series. Not Homer.
Not a Homer, but, I mean, obviously, since they're going to beat the Braves, the only reason they're going to beat the Braves is because they're going to go on to win the World Series. And that's my logic.
They're a bunch of chokes. They can't win. But that's fine.
The Nationals?
Yeah, they always choke in the playoffs.
Yeah,
there's going to be a year.
No, that's the Cubs kept thinking that too, and it took them over 100 years. So
yeah, but some of those Cubs teams. I mean, this is a pretty good Nationals team.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were some good Cubs teams too.
Never
I'm sure. I'm sure that the Knicks and the Jets didn't think that they, at some point, they were going to have a good team.
And come on, I thought we were having a nice podcast here. Baseball's starting. Why do you got to bring them into
it? I'm sure
it?
That the Falcons thought that they had the Super Bowl in the bag 2 years ago.
Wow, you're just killing both of us here.
I mean, I got nothing to go on. I got no teams. My teams suck.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. Yeah, we should have spent more time on the bold predictions because Ray gave us about 85,000 of them.
I mean,
me and Ben did a combined like
give more bold predictions next week because we may not have a ton to talk about only a couple of days into the season. But why don't we talk a couple of bold predictions today? Why don't we say two each? And let's start with Evan.
Cool. Well, one of mine are tied together. So I said that John Gray and Julio Teheran will both be top 25 starting pitchers. If you've heard me talk at any point in this offseason, you've heard me talk about Julio Teheran and why I think he's going to be a lot better this year, figuring out SunTrust and just getting back to being, not an absolute boss, but like, you know, boss. And then John Gray, a lot of people look down at the home ballpark where he's actually been better. He's a huge strikeout guy. I think the Rockies are going to win a ton of games this year, so that can only help you out. And then we will also say, let's go back to the well. Brett Gardner will be a top 25 outfielder. And in the sheet, I put ... again. If you remember last year, I was on the Brett Gardner train. And I don't understand why we would be less, off of that train, given that, you know, Gary is back and, no injury stuff. That Giancarlo Stanton guy's in town. So I just think there's going to be – maybe people think he's going to fall off in the speed and the power department a little bit, and maybe he scores 130 runs. Who knows?
For mine, I have that Lance McCullers will top 165 innings this year and be a top 25 pitcher. And I also have that Brandon Morrow will be a top 10 relief pitcher this year.
Ooh.
I know you hate that, but I think that yes, he's going to be able to keep the job all year. I think he'll have enough saves and have good enough ratios and he'll have a K printing, if not slightly better, to be able to put together a top 10 year with so much interchangeable closers in the National League. You know, you got teams like the Marlins, potentially the Phillies. There's a chance that the Braves could change, that the Diamondbacks could change. There's a bunch of teams there that, you know, could make changes as the year goes on, that if the Cubs and Morrow perform well, that he's going to have a good chance to be a top 10 guy. And, you know, he could have a year like Wade Davis had last year, potentially. So,
and you're one of these guys that says moving him to the bullpen is going to save his arm or his shoulder.
Well, no, he just had a good year last year to be able to show that he's capable of having good years. That's about all I would say for him. And with Lance McCullers, I think that 165 innings isn't totally unreasonable for him to be able to do. Obviously, he's had injuries over the last couple of years, but I think if he's able to stay healthy enough, obviously there's some injury baked into the 165 innings only, but I think that there's a chance that he's able to get enough innings and strikeouts and a top 25 finish performing for one of the best teams in the American League isn't completely outrageous.
I completely agree with the McCullers stuff. I mean, you want to talk about pure K potential when you're on the mound. I definitely like that. As far as the top 25 finish, I just don't know if he can do enough in the 165 innings to get him up in that level. Do you think?
Yeah, I think it's possible because so many pitchers now don't even reach 200 innings that I think basically the 165 to 185 mark is basically where a big majority of pitchers will be. And if he's able to put 13, 14 wins up with a decent ERA and whip, and he's probably, if he gets 165 innings, he's likely getting 180 Ks, if not better. I think that he's got the numbers to be able to be a top 25 pitcher because of that.
I like McCullers a lot. My concern is that they're going to be extra careful with him.
Probably, but I think 165 isn't a completely unreasonable number to expect for a pitcher that got about 100 to 115 last year.
No, that's not that unreasonable.
And Ray, which of your many, 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 many predictions are you going to go with?
All right, so since you went with Morrow being a top 10 closer, you spurred me to go in the closer direction. I'm saying that for a good portion of the year and to close out the year, CJ Edwards will be the Cubs' closer. Morrow really only has the 1 year in San Diego where he closed. The Dodgers really burned the heck out of him last year in the playoffs. I think Morrow is going to be more suited to an eighth inning guy. Seventh or an eighth inning guy wouldn't surprise me to see him go on the DL this year after what happened to him last year. And I think Edwards has the potential, has the younger arm, maybe better stuff. I think Edwards is going to end up being the closer. I'm going to stick with bullpens. I think Boxberger is going to be a top 10 closer, and I think he's going to hold on to the job all year in Arizona. He had 41 saves a few years ago. He's healthy. He's shown flashes in clips the last 2 years when he's been healthy and pitched. He's done very well, and you're going to get more than a strikeout in an inning. And I think Edwin Diaz is going to be one of the first closers to lose his job.
Yeah.
I just do not trust Diaz at all. And then I will go with one more. Aaron Judge's 2018 performance from a statistical perspective is going to be identical to Justin Smoke's performance from last year.
Just to clarify, you meant Carl Edwards, right?
CJ, Carl, yeah.
Carl Edwards Jr. Yeah, Carl's Jr. I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page. I was like, did they add someone else that his name is CJ Edwards, and I just missed it? I just wanted to make sure we were on the right page.
Yeah, no, we're on the same page.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you giving four when I only asked for two, so, you know, that's why we always run late, because you always like to give more.
You're learning, Ray. You're learning.
I like the Boxberger one. Obviously, I don't agree with the Edwards one, but I do believe that if Morrow does lose a job, that Edwards is the next in the line. I think Aaron Judge is going to have a better year than what Smoke did last year, and I could easily see Edwin Diaz losing his closer job. I think if you had to pick one of the top-tier closers who's losing that job, it's going to be Edwin Diaz. So,
or Knebel.
I don't think it would be Corey Knebel.
I'm fine with Knebel, tell you the truth.
He walks a lot of guys, and, you know, if they want to keep Hader in the bullpen, you never know.
All right,
but I don't think Hader would close. I think Hader would be
I was thinking about that you would want to give him some reps. But I think as far as a pure skill pitcher.
All right. Well, yeah. Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter and what you're working on?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. And we're getting into our season coverage. We'll have the weekly podcast through the season. Have a nice piece coming up on Wednesday, kind of just yay, the season is here, let's get going kind of thing. And I'm also over at Roto Professor writing about the season, giving you some rundowns on what happened the night before and previewing the two start pitchers.
And what about you, Evan?
You can find me on Twitter at FWFB. You can find me on these podcasts, Annoying Ben, teaching Ray my ways. Let's talk baseball. Let's jam out. Ben, is there anything fun you're doing this baseball season?
I'm seeing you.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like work. You're a man of the people, Ben. You're out there in the airwaves. You've got the Push Accept podcast you're working on.
Yes. So you can find me on Twitter at @BBrandsFWFB. You can find me on the Push Accept podcast, which had its inaugural show last week in place of our show. You'll also that show will be on Saturdays during the season. So that show is basically going to be just trades. That's all we're going to be talking about. Trades that you guys send us, trades that happen in our leagues. If you want opinions on your trades, if you have a trade that you're considering and you want to get an idea of what it is, or if you've done a trade and you want our opinion on what side we think made out better, just make sure you give us the details of the league so we have an idea of what we're working with. You can find us every Wednesday on the Kuhn and Friends podcast. Obviously, it's going to be Ray and Evan and myself. And you can find me still on the basketball podcast, joined by Eric Mackey. Obviously, the last couple of weeks we haven't been able to do that because I have I've had the flu, so I haven't been able to find anyone to replace me because no one else likes basketball in this podcast, it seems. Which is fine,
no, except it's for terrible.
But yes, so you'll be able to find me on those. Those keep me plenty busy, and we're looking forward to the beginning of the baseball season, which is just a few days away. So, from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.